And we're holding on page 42 in Yevamos, Mitzvahs Chalitza Perek Shneim also. In the middle of Oysen Emtes. The subject of the Perek is all about the dinim and the details of Chalitza. So one thing it points out in the Perek is the Dayanim of the Beis Din that are overseeing the Chalitza have to all be, not only they can't be Gerim, it can't even be, they can't be Gerim. It has to be that at least, it has to be at least that their mother was Jewish. So Omar Rava, so in this connection, Rava says, Ger donas chavere dvar Torah. Minat Torah, a Ger would be able to judge another Ger. Rashi learns that we're talking about even dini nefoshes. So we're talking about even a ger is being judged for anything that would involve that might involve the death penalty. Rashi learns that it means a ger, that Rava is saying a ger would be able to sit on a beis din for that purpose. Tosfos here and earlier in the Masechta disagrees and says no, only as far as dini mamonos. Anyway, Shanema, Rava says, because the Pasuk says, Soim tosim alecha melech, the Pasuk says you should place over yourself a king, asher yivcha Hashem alekecha boy, whom Hashem will choose him, mikerev achecha tosim alecha melech, and the Pasuk continues, from among your brothers, you have to place a king over yourself. Meaning that the king has to be from Jewish descent, he can't be a ger or descended from gerim. So, Rava says, we can derive from that, alecha, over you, over a born Jew, who then you have to have not only a king, but also a dayan who's going to be superior to you, and that he's judging you, then he has to be from among the born Jews. But a ger who's not would be allowed to judge a fellow ger. Again, dinei nefoshes according to Rashi, dinei mamonos only according to Tosfos. The imhoisa imam Yisrael. Now, if the guy's mother is a yid, so he's not, his both his parents are not Jews, but his mother is, then don afilu Yisrael. Then Rava says he would be suitable to sit on a beis din, even to judge born Jews. Inin chalitza. However, when it comes to sitting on a beis din for chalitza, it's not even enough. He himself can't be a ger, but even it has to be that both his parents are born Jews. Ad shehe over v'imam Yisrael. It has to be that both his mother and father are born Jews. Shenem of a nikra shmoi b'Yisrael, as the pasuk says, his name should be called in Yisrael, meaning that he has to be, as Rashi says, Yisrael mikol tzadin. He has to be a born Jew from every possible side. So neither he nor either of his parents can be a ger. When it comes to the beis din for chalitza,
so that if the brother had like a son from a shifa or something like that, it's not really called a Yisrael.
Right.
He doesn't need to have the woman doesn't have to have chalitza.
No. We're not talking about that. What we're talking about is the beis din that oversees the chalitza.
Difference.
No, so the difference is when it comes to chalitza, you have to have as long as you have two people who are paternal brothers in halacha, then one of them would have to do chalitza to the other. If it comes out, even if it was married to even if one of them is married to a woman that he's also to be married to, mamzeres or what have you, nevertheless kedushin are toifus, and therefore chalitza is going to have to be done. Can't do yibum because she's a mamzeres, for example, but chalitza would have to be done, otherwise she can't marry anybody else. But here we're talking about the dayonim, so there it doesn't matter. So for that purpose, then it doesn't matter. You can have, now obviously if you have a ger himself, by definition, is not going to have a paternal brother in halacha, because gerushin is gaiuk katan shaner the dummy. We talked about that yesterday. But if you have a person who, if you have gerim, have a child, then if they have two boys, then yeah, either one of them would have to do chalitza or yibum for the other, because they're still brothers in halacha. But here we're talking about, as far as that doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be Yisrael as far as that. But as far as the beis din, it has to be, when it says v'nikra shmoi b'Yisrael, the members of the beis din have to be born Jews. So right before this, the Gemara brings that the one time one of the Amoraim wanted to have one of the Chachamim, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, sit on a beis din for chalitza, and Rav Shmuel had to tell him that I'm a ger, that my father and I were both became gerim, and therefore I would be possible to sit on this beis din. Tosfos, by the way, in that connection, interestingly mentions, so if he's a ger, if he's a ger, how does he come to be known after his father's name, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda? Tosfos says there's a couple of places in Shas where we have mention of someone named Rav Yehuda Hindivar. Hindivar means either he came, in some places Hindavi is used as a translation of Kush, So that would mean that he came from Ethiopia and became a ger. The other possibility is Hindava might be related to the word Hindu. And in that case, it means he came from India. One way or the other, he became a ger. He took the name Yehuda, and then his son also became a ger along with him. Gershinus Gaius, the cotton should know the dummy. So he's known by his father's name, even though Lahalocha is not considered related to him. Anyway, so Rashi also points out in this connection, by the way, even though the Pasuk Mekerev Achecha is talking about appointing a king, a dayan to a certain extent is considered like a king. In fact, we even have, there's the idea the Gemara mentions in Ksubas, we'll get to it in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, that a dayan is supposed to be like a king, self-sufficient, not one who's looking out for shoychad or for any kind of financial gain from being a dayan. So therefore, so a pasuk that refers to the appointment of a king can also be darshan about the qualifications for a dayan. Further on, it talks about now like this. What's the mitzvah of chalitza? So we know the main part of the chalitza is that the yavama takes the shoe off the yavam's foot. The question is, the pasuk uses the expression v'cholatz naloi me'al ragloi. Now the word cholatz can have a couple of different meanings. It can mean to take off, but it can also mean to strengthen. So therefore, so the Gemara asks, how do we know that the words v'cholatz naloi mean that she should take off his shoe? Maybe just the opposite. It means she should strengthen the shoe on his foot. In other words, she should tie the shoe onto his foot. So the Gemara goes through a whole discussion about that. And in the course of that discussion, the Gemara brings the following. V'haksiv yichalitz oni ba'onyoi. So the pasuk says that Hashem will yichalitz the poor person in his poverty. Now, on the face of it, that means that Hashem will give him strength to be able to bear, to be able to withstand his poverty. So that means also you have the word cholatz then means to strengthen. And the answer is no, because you can say in the pasuk it means b'schar onyoy, it means as a schar for the fact that he was poor and that was mechaper for his averus. Yichaltzenu midina shel gehenim, then that saves him, then that extracts him from the din of gehenim. So yes, the word cholatz can mean to extract, as in to extract the foot from the shoe, which is what the yavama does for the yavam, and therefore yes, we can say that v'choltz naloy means that. Okay, the Gemara says Elohad Dichtiv. You have another pasuk though that also uses the word the shodash cholatz in connection with Hashem saving people. Choyna Malach Hashem Saviv Liyreyav. The Malach of Hashem camps surrounding those who fear Hashem. Vayichaltzim So again, on the face of it, that means that he strengthens them. So again, that would mean that the shodash cholatz means to strengthen. In fact, by the way, I mean, the Gemara is going to go through, the Gemara goes through the discussion over here, and it ends up saying that, yes, the word cholatz can have at least two meanings. Actually, there's a medrash that points out that it can have as many as four meanings. Besides, for here, we're saying that it can mean to strengthen or it can mean to extract. A medrash Rabbah in Parshas Bahar points out it can also mean to save. And it can also mean to strengthen, as we're saying over here. It can mean to extract, and it can also mean to give rest. Where the Medrash mentions, when we say on Shabbos, "Ritzei v'hachlit seinu," that means it means please be Hashem, please be willing to give us rest. The Yom Shabbos Hazeh. So it actually has four meanings, but here the Gemara is focusing on two of them. Anyway, so again, so choyne malach Hashem sovel lirei v'echaltzim. So the answer is fine. Again, it means b'schar yireyav in the schar of those who fear Hashem, yichaltzein midina shel gehenim, Hashem saves them, Hashem extracts them from the din of gehenim. So again, the shorash cholatz can mean to extract or to remove, like what you do by chalitza. Now, Marshon, a bunch of the Mefarshim ask, so what do we mean exactly? Ba'onyoy, we can understand, as a schar, for the fact that he was poor, and he lived such a hard life, and nevertheless, he didn't waver in his emunah in the Eibishter, then therefore he'll be saved midina shel gehenim. But what about bischar yireyav? What do you mean? If you mean that the yireyav themselves are saved, then we'll just say yireyav yichaltzim. So Maharsha explains that that's what it means. In other words, that, and anyway, if Choyne Malach Hashem Sov of the Yireyav, how are they even in danger of Gehenim in the first place, that Hashem would have to be Yichalitz them, that he would have to extract and save them from there. Sparsha says that's what it means. In other words, it means that we're not talking about the tzaddik himself. We're not talking about Yereyev themselves. We're talking about as a result of their schus, they're able with their schus to save other people, Medina Shogahanim. So b'schar Yereyev, for the schar of the Yereyev to whom another yid was close to, then Hashem will save them, a person who otherwise might have gone into Gehenim, and Hashem saves them and extracts him from it. Marshall gives the examples that we have, for example, of Shalom was going to go to Gehenim after what he did, rebelling against David, but David was able to schlep him out of that. And you have other examples that different Mephoshim talk about. So the bottom line is that's what it would, so the word Vayichaltzeim would mean that Hashem extracts them and rescues them from Gehenim. Okay, what about, here's another one. Ela hodichtiv, another thing, you have a posik vatzmei secha yachlitz. The posik says that Hashem will yachlitz your bones. The Amr Rabbi Elazar, Zuma Ula Sheb Brachas. And Rabbi Elazar says, you should know, this is the greatest of all brachas. And what is that bracha? The Amr Rabbi, Zeruzi Garmi. Means that Hashem strengthens the person's bones. So in other words, there we see that Yachlitz means to strengthen. So we're back to the question then. Maybe the Chotzen Aloi means that she should strengthen, she should reinforce his shoe on his foot by tying it on rather than by untying and taking it off. What is the context of that bracha? Marsha points out that you have the psukim there in Yeshaya. We read it as the Haftarah on the morning of Rosh, on the morning of Yom Kippur. We have over there brachas that are given, six brachas that a person gets when he gives tzedakah, and 11 brachas that a person gets when he speaks kindly and nicely to the oni. Mephoshim discussed, do we mean the 11 include the six? Do we mean it's another 11 on top of the six? Whatever the case, the point is, so you have a bunch of brachas mentioned over there, and it mentions vatzmei secha yachlitz. The point is, in other words, Maharsha says that all the other brachas that you find in that context are all things outside a person's body. But here you have atzmei secha, your atzmos. The very word atzmos itself is related to the word etzem, which means the bones. Yachlitz, Hashem will strengthen. So therefore, that is ma'ula sheba brachas, because more than any of the other brachas, that affects you directly rather than the things around you. And so we see, obviously, that wouldn't just mean that Hashem saves the bones midin shel Gehenim. So what would be so great about that? That's why we need, so Rava points out that it has nothing to do with Gehenim. It means that Hashem strengthens his actual bones, his actual body. Well, then we're back to the question. How are we using that shodesh in a different sense when it comes to chalitza? And the Rif points out another point as well. It's not like the bones exclusively go to Gehenim. If a person is going to Gehenim, it's not just his bones. So there'd be no reason to say Atzmei Secha Yachlitz means that Hashem is going to extract your bones from Gehenim. What about the rest of you? Therefore, we have to understand that it means strengthening, as Rava says. Okay, so the Gemara answers, Ein, as a matter of fact, you have mashma hochi, mashma hochi v'cholo. Yes, as a matter of fact, the shoresh cholatz can have either meaning. It can mean to strengthen, it can mean to extract, and as the Medrash points out, it can mean two other ones as well. It can mean to rescue or to give rest, but the Gemara explains here, actually, we know it means taking off the shoe, because the pasuk continues, me'al ragloi. It says she should take off the, v'chol tenale, me'al ragloi. The word me'al, from on his foot, makes it clear that we're talking about something that was on his foot, and she's removing, namely to remove the shoe. Okay. In this connection, speaking of chalitza, the Gemara tells, Amaleahu mina l'Ram Gamliel. A certain min asks Ram Gamliel, and we know that min in Gemara terminology includes a wide variety of different people who don't believe in certain fundamental concepts of Yiddishkeit. Very often it means, among others, it means somebody who thinks Hashem has a body, who thinks that there's no Hashem, who thinks that there's two of them, etc. Very often in the Gemara, it also refers to some of the early Christians, many of whom held of such ideas. So one of them says to Rabbi Gamliel, look at you Jewish people, Amad Cholitz Le Mori Minei. You Jewish people are a people that Hashem has done chalitza from you. So in other words, the metaphor is, in other words, and he's saying, you Jewish people in Golos, like you have in the Pasuk in Eicha, Hoysa Ka'almana. So you're so to speak, like a Shemeres Yavam, but then Hashem is rejecting you, Chas V'Shalom, like the way a Yavam might reject his Yavama, and gives you chalitza, and that's it, you have no further connection with him. It was and still is a very common argument of the Christians to argue that Hashem rejected us and chose the quote unquote more moral goyim instead of us. So it was a common enough thing that anyway. So dichtiv, as in fact you have a pasuk, The Navi says the Jewish people, Hosea, Bitsonam of Koram Yehul Lavakash Hashem, they're going to come with their sheep and their cattle to seek Hashem. They're going to want to bring korbanos. Velo yimtso, but they won't find cholatz mehem. Hashem has cholatz from them. So that means, in other words, the Min is arguing, it means Hashem has done chalitza with you and you have no further connection with him. Rabbi Gamliel answers him, Shoite. Miksiv cholatz lohem. After all, let's think of how chalitza works. The Yavama is the one who does the action. She's the one who takes the shoe off his foot. But we always have the expression in throughout the Masechta is always that he is cholatz her. It's always the Yavam was cholatz the Yavimtai. So if it said cholatz lahem, then yes, it would mean, because even though he's in the actual chalitza itself, he's kind of playing the passive role. Nevertheless, in Mishnah and Gemara terminology, we speak of him as having the active role. He's the one who causes the chalitza to happen. So therefore, so if it said cholatz lahem, then fine, you'd have a point. Then it would mean that Hashem has done the chalitza. But no, cholatz mehem, it says Hashem is cholatz from them, meaning, in other words, that you have, it's the opposite. You don't have, so to speak, the Jewish people taking off the shoe from Hashem's foot, where he's making it happen, and therefore that would mean, as you're arguing, that it means Hashem has rejected the Jewish people. Just the other way around. In effect, the Pasuk is saying that Hashem has removed the shoe of the Jewish people, picturing Hashem as the Yavam and the Jewish people as the Yavama. So Rav Gamliel says to him, the Yavama decholtzu la'achin. Now consider, if one of the brothers goes and takes off the Yavama's shoe, midi meshosha isba, is there any meaning in that? Of course not. Chalitza is the Yavama takes the shoe off the Yavama's foot, not the other way around. So therefore, Rav Gamliel is telling him, you've got it backwards. The way the Pasuk is phrasing it is that Hashem is almost like, so to speak, play acting and saying, fine, I'll take off your shoe, but not that doesn't obviously do anything as far as ruining their relationship. So therefore, so Rav Gamliel is telling him that no, on the contrary, we're the Shemeres Yavam. We're the ones who rebelled against Hashem. Like in the metaphor, it's as though like she's putting down her foot and saying, I don't want to be married to you. Take off my shoe and let me go. So even if he takes off her shoe, does it do any good? Of course not. That's not what chalitza is. So the same way Rav Gamliel tells him, the rebelliousness and the not wanting to be connected anymore is not on Hashem's part. Hashem still very much wants us. We're the ones who rejected Hashem and rebelled against him. But Hashem still wants us, and Hashem has already sworn that he's not exchanging us for anybody else, and therefore we will have that relationship restored with Hashem the way it's supposed to, and we will have a Yibum, and we will have a reconciliation. Further on, the Gemara talks about the question now. So we're saying like this. We're saying v'cholta nale me'al raglo. So we have to define what part of the leg or the foot is included in the word regel. Because the word regel definitely includes the foot, but on the face of it, it also includes certain parts of the legs. And so the Gemara goes through several psukim showing that on the face of it, elsewhere, regel can mean legs. And therefore, that the a nafkamina of that would be how high up on the leg can the chalitza shoe go? How high up can the straps of it that she has to undo? How high can they go? The halacha is if they go above the knee, then the chalitza is possible. The straps have to go dafka on the bottom part of the foot. So the Gemara goes through a whole discussion in that connection. What exactly is the meaning of regel and halacha in Torah? And we see the Gemara brings on the face of it various psukim, which show that ragloi can also, that the word regel can also mean the leg. So here's one. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Sheva. Now we have like this. We have in Sefer Shoftim, we have the whole story involving Sisera. Sisera was the Canaan general. He and the king that he worked for, Yovan Melech Canaan, are dominating and oppressing the Jewish people for 20 years. Then comes Devorah and Barak, and they go and fight against them, and a tremendous mess happens, and Sisera's army is swept away, and they're in the water, and Sisera himself runs to the tent of Yoel Eshes Chever Akeni. To try and find a safe zone over there, because the Pasuk says that Chever and his family had a peace treaty with Sisera, so he figured he'll be safe there. And Yoel invites him in. She gives him to drink and gets him to sleep, and then she takes a tent peg and hammers into his head and kills him. So now the Gemara fills in some of the backstory over there. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Sheva Be'ilis Baal Oisei Rosha Ba'Oisei Yoim. That Rosha Sisera had relations with Yoel seven times on that day before he fell asleep, and then she offed him. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Devorah says in her Shira after that, Bein Ragleha Korad Nofal Shachav, between her feet, he kneeled down, he fell, he lay. Bein Ragleha Korad Nofal, between her feet, he kneeled and he fell. Ba'asher Korah, where he kneeled, Shom Nofal, there he fell, Shodur destroyed. So the Gemara is understanding, Rabbi Yochanan is understanding that each of these expressions, Korah, Nofal, Shachav, Korah, Nofal, Korah, and Nofal equals seven. So that means seven times he had relations with her. And Bein Raglehel, the point is, the Gemara says, obviously, where does that take place? Not between the feet, but higher up, between the legs, and therefore wouldn't that show that Rego means legs? One interesting thing. Now the Gemara is going to ask how she allowed such a thing, and we're going to discuss that point. One very interesting thing that's brought that Rama Mifano says on it. We know famously the Gemara says elsewhere that Sisera had descendants who became Geirim, and it's brought all the way back from the time of the Gaonim. Reb Nissim Gaon brings a tradition that descendant of Sisera who became a Geirim included Reb Akiva. To be exact, Reb Akiva's father Yosef was a Geir. So the Rama Mifano says they were actually descended from, here Sisera was saying was Mizana with Yoel seven times, and he says she became pregnant from that, and their descendant hundreds of years later was this guy who became the Ger Yosef and whose father and whose son was Rabbi Akiva. She's an Eishes Ish. Now there are, I believe Rabbi Yaakov Emdin wants to say on this Gemara or on other relevant Gemaras on this subject, I think he wants to say that she might not have been a Bas Yisrael. Now the whole family, Yoel and Chever, her husband, and all of them are descended from Yisrael. But I think he wants to say that not all, now usually we say Yisro himself became a Ger and all of his descendants did too. I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to say, actually, based on this Gemara, that maybe in fact Chever's family were among the descendants of Yisro who did not become Gerim, they were only Geri Toshav. So in that case, then, for the Gemara is still going to ask how she could allow Sisera to do such a thing, because Goyim, after all, have a mitzvah. One among those sheva mitzvahs is also not to have relations outside of her marriage with anybody else. But nevertheless, it would be at least not as severe as if she was a Bas Yisrael. But most everybody else seems to understand that she was actually a Jewish woman, that they were actually from the descendants of Yisrael who actually became Goyim.
Is that called adultery for them also?
Well, definitely, yeah. I mean, the definition of adultery is yeah, anything outside of marriage. So that's the Gemara asks, Vokam is Hanya me Avera. So the Gemara asks, isn't she having Hana from the Avera? Meaning, Tosfos points out, the question is not why she wasn't Moisa Nefesh. First of all, you have a concept in Halacha called Isha Karka Olam. We have, when it comes to Znus, many times we say that the woman is considered passive in it. The man is the active partner. The woman is the passive one. And therefore, not necessarily when it comes to matters of Arayas, is a woman chayev to be Moser Nefesh. There was actually a good deal of discussion about that. But the Gemara mentions it in connection with Esther and Achashverosh, why she didn't have to be Moser Nefesh to not have relations with Achashverosh. And one point is, because Karka Olam Havori. But anyway, so that would be one point over here. But anyway, Tosfos points out that, look, Fakert, it comes out from the Psukim and from the way the Gemara is explaining over here that she's the one who talked him into it. What happened was, actually, she knew that he's a dangerous enemy of the Jewish people. So here he's coming to her for shelter because he figured they have a peace treaty, but she knows better. She knows she's not going to let him go. She wants him dead also. So she had to win his trust and she had to tire him out and be able to get that he should fall asleep and then she can kill him. So she figured this is the way to do it. So the Gemara's question is not why she wasn't Moser Nefesh. The question is that after all, she's a tzaddikus. And after all, you find that Devorah in her Shira praises her for what she did. How could she be praising her, especially in such effusive terms, as we're going to talk about in a second, where on the face of it, after all, what she did is objectively an Avera. Now, elsewhere, the Gemara does point out, it's an example of Avera Lashma. She was doing it L'shem Shamayim, but nevertheless, the question would be why she deserves such high praise for it. She's having Hana from the Avera. The question is, in other words, like this. In the Shira, Devorah says on her, Tevorach minoshim Yoel Eishes Chever Akeni. Yoel, the wife of Chever Akeni, should be blessed more than any other women. Minoshim ba'oihel tevorach, she deserves a greater bracha than the women in the tent. Now, the Gemara, when it brings this point in a couple of other places, it brings it in particular, it brings it in Nozir and in Hodias, it mentions the women in the tent refers to the Imaris. Each of the Imaris we find her name mentioned in connection with a tent. Here in our parasha, we have Oyho Rochel and Oyho Leah. Earlier we have Oyho Sara Imai, and we have Rivka in the tent as well. So each of the Imaris is associated someplace with a tent. So now, so Devorah in Hoshira is saying that what Yoel accomplished is even greater. She deserves a bigger bracha for what she did than the Imaris. So the question is, why would that be so? So she's having hana from the Avera. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Yochai, Kol Teivosen Shol Rishoyim Ra Hi Eitzel Tzadikim. The answer is that any of the good that the Rishoyim claim that they're doing for Tzadikim is really the Tzadikim consider it a bad thing. So in other words, Yoel is having no hana whatsoever from all of this that she's experiencing with Sisera, because he's a Rosha and she's a Tzedekis and she really wants nothing to do with him, and she's doing it only in order to save the Jewish people. Shenemar, as in fact we find in our parasha, Hashem warns Lavan before he confronts Yaakov on Har HaGilad over there. Hashem tells him, Yishom alecha pentadaberim Yaakov mitoiv adra. Be careful that you don't speak anything to Yaakov, good or bad. Now, b'shlemi ra l'chai, you can understand why Hashem is warning Lavan not to speak anything bad, not to make any threats or anything to Yaakov. El toiv amayloi, why shouldn't he say anything good to Yaakov? El shmamina, so you see from that, tovosan shor reshoim roi hi etzel tzadikim. What the reshoim think of as good, the tzaddik thinks of as bad. So therefore, so returning to Yoel and Sisera then, so even though on the face of it, you would say, after all, she is having hana from the bia, but the answer is that she's not, because he's a rosha, and she wants nothing to do with him, and therefore for her it would be a ra, and she has no hana from it at all. Which in that case, now, when the Gemara in other places, in Nozir and in Hodias, contrasts her with the Imahos, so what does that mean? In what way then is what she accomplished greater than the Imahos? So Rashi in Nozir explains, the Pirush that's printed under Rashi's name in Nozir is generally understood to not be from Rashi, but anyway, he explains, it's usually called the Meforish for that reason, but anyway, he explains that the vort is that the Imahos, we find that most of them gave a shifcha to their husbands to have children. We find that Sarah did that with Hagar, Rachel and Leah did that with Bilhah and Zilpah respectively. So here we're saying, on the other hand, that then they wanted to do that in order to create more shvatim, where he was saying that Yoel was Moser herself. Marsha doesn't really like that explanation. Tosfos also doesn't care much for it. So they explain, rather, the vort is, the Imahos, of course, when they're having relations with their respective husbands, they're doing it l'shem shamayim in order to found a Jewish people. But after all, they're having hana from it as well, a natural thing. As a husband and wife have relations, they're both getting pleasure from it. Here, Yoel is getting no pleasure whatsoever from what she's doing, and she's doing it for the sake of the Jewish people. So in that sense, what she's accomplishing is greater. They're doing something, and they're getting hana from it. So it is lishma, but there's still hana involved. Here, she's doing lishma, and there's no hana involved. That's the greater thing. The Aruch HaNer kind of combines the two explanations. He says, look, by the Imahos, what you had is, when they wanted to have more, there should be more Shvatim, there should be more of a Jewish people, then they did both. They delegated it to their Shvachos, and when they were doing it themselves, then they had Hana. Here she's doing it herself, she's not delegating it to anybody else, and she has no Hana, so therefore, in that sense, what she's doing is greater even than the Noshim Ba'ohil, even greater than the Imahos. Anyway, so getting back to the Gemara then, so we have to figure out what exactly is the Ra over here. The Shlema Hostam, you can understand with Lavan and Yaakov, Hashem is telling Lavan not to speak anything good to Yaakov, because he may end up mentioning a name of Avodah Zarah, and for a tzaddik like Yaakov, he would be horrified that through him it should happen that a name of Avodah Zarah has to be mentioned. And in fact, Rashi points out that it did happen, because eventually, in the course of the whole argument over there, Lavan tells him, Loma ganavta eselikai, why just steal my gods? So that amounts to him mentioning as Avodah Zarah. Other Mephoshim explain, another point is also at the end of the whole thing, at the end of the parasha you have when they're making their peace treaty, that Lavan says, Elekei Avraham v'Elekei Nacho Yishpetu Beinenu, the God of Avraham, which refers to Hashem, and Lahavdol, the God of Nacho, which refers to Nacho's Getchkes, should judge between us. So therefore, so we see also there he's mentioning a name of Avodah Zarah. So we can understand why, to begin with, Hashem is warning Lavan not to do that, because Yaakov wouldn't want that a name of Avodah Zarah is mentioned because of him. Elahocha, but over here, when we're talking about Sisera and and by the way, actually, Anaf Yosef discusses the issue over here. I mean, the fact is, in the end, so here Hashem had warned Lavan not to speak to Yaakov mitov ad ra for these reasons. And here we see that Lavan did end up speaking with Yaakov mitov ad ra, and he ended up mentioning these getchkes in the two different contexts. So was he not afraid of going against what Hashem wants? He himself says to Yaakov, "I would have the capability of harming you, except that Hashem told me not to." So in that case, Hashem also told him not to say anything good, which he would consider good, namely a name of Avodah Zarah. So Anaf Yosef explains that primarily what Hashem is concerned about and what he's telling Lavan, make sure you don't do, is to swear in the name of Avodah Zarah. So that we don't find Lavan doing. We find him mentioning Loma Ganavta Esadikoi. We find him mentioning of a Kenocher, but we don't find him swearing in the name of any of them. Yaakov would have very strongly objected to that, and that's what Hashem wanted to forestall by telling Lavan not to do that. So in other words, the point is, again, Lavan would think that that's a fine and a good thing to do, to swear that I'll be loyal to you, but Hashem tells him don't, because the kind of swearing that you're going to do in the name of Avodah Zarah is something that Yaakov would consider bad. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. By Varach Lavan, he gave him a bracha. Fine, a person gives a bracha before he leaves. Nothing objectionable in that, necessarily, but to actually swear in the name of Avodah Zarah, that not. So, actually, now that you mention it, I mean, Anaf Yosef does consider and does continue, and he mentioned that he mentions fine at the end, Lavan is taking leave of them by Nashik Lavan. He kissed them and then he left. Fine, it's a reasonable thing to do that he's gonna. It's a bit minag derech eretz that you're gonna give a bracha to somebody. That's not so. Therefore, Hashem is warning him in advance. Don't bench them with the name of Avodah Zarah, which you would be likely to do. So fine, what bracha Lavan gave them, it doesn't say, but he may have given them just a generic bracha that Hashem should be with you, or something like that, not mentioning Avodah Zarah. Okay, anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Ela Hocha, but here with Sisera and Yoel, my raw Ika, what is the evil in it? Why? What would we say exactly is so evil about it, to the extent that we could say that even though normally a couple has relations and they both have Hanah from it, but here we're saying that Yoel would have absolutely no Hanah from it, what exactly would be so bad that would prevent her from having Hanah at all? And part of the question is, because you even find, for example, there's a relevant Gemara in Ksubas that mentions you can have a case of oinus. You can have a case where a woman is raped, and then in the course of it, while it's happening, sometimes it happens. You know, she starts feeling a certain pleasure from it. You can even have where people come to try to rescue her, and she says, "Leave him alone." And the halacha is we don't pay attention to that, and we still do whatever we can to save her and harm or kill the guy, because we say at that point we say yetzer al bashal. Like at that point she's seized by a yetzer, and then therefore like she's not thinking straight. So the question is, what makes us say over here that throughout the entire thing, all of these Sheva Be'ilis, not once should she feel any twinge of pleasure, Ad Kedekach, again, Zavora with Nevuah, can praise her as greater than the Imaris? Why? What exactly was it about it? And the answer is the Kashodiba Zuama. The answer is because Sisera, by having relations with her, injected into her Zuama, a ruchniistic of filthiness. So that's the kind of thing that she would be so repelled by that even as many times as it's happening, she's not having any hana. De'amar Rabbi Yochanan, as we find, the goyim have such a zuama. B'shar shabon nochash al chava, back when the snake was ba an chava. Now, where Rashi explains in some other places, what do we mean ba al chava? Did he have relations with her? Well, in a way, yes. When Hashem asks Chava, what were you doing? What do you think you were doing? Eating from the Eitz Hadas? She says hanochash hishiani va'oichel. In the symbol meaning hishiani means he tricked me, Rashi mentions on the pasuk. But the Gemara darshins hishiani also meloshin nisuin, that he had in some way the snake had relations with Chava, and therefore when he put a zuam, or he put a ruchnistic, a filthiness into her and into her descendants. So Yisrael sha'omdu al Har Sinai, the Jewish people who later on stood by Har Sinai, poska zuamasan. Then that zuama, that filthiness, went away from the Jewish people. Even when we first came to Har Sinai, in fact, which is one meaning, the Avudraham and a number of Rishonim explain, when we say in the Haggadah, Ilu kervonu fnei Har Sinai v'lo nosan la'as ha-Torah dayenu, what do you mean? What good would it have been to come in front of Har Sinai and not receive the Torah? This is one answer. Just coming to Har Sinai itself, remove the zuama. The goyim who never stood by Har Sinai from Matan Torah, loy posko zuhamos, and therefore the zuhama never ceased. So now, a few hundred years later, it's either you have Sisera and Yoel, And therefore, he still has that Zuama. And meanwhile, here, the Gemara apparently is assuming, as we were saying before, that she's a Jew, not like I was quoting before from Rabbi. In the end, she killed him. But wait, so not like I was saying before from Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that apparently she might have only been a Giyotis Tosha, but apparently the Gemara is taking it as a given that she was a Jew. Therefore, she didn't have that Zuama of a Goy. And therefore, when the Goy is coming and then doing this with her, that brings a Zuama into her, which she resented so much, Ad Kedei Kach, that there's no even the tiniest bit of pleasure that she would have from it, and therefore Devorah can praise her as greater than Minoshim Ba'oihel. She did it only in order to kill him, but nevertheless, the Gemara was bothered by the question that if she had any Hana from it, you can't call her greater than the Imahos. The Imahos also had Hana when they did Bia, and they're also doing it L'shem Mitzvah. That's what I was explaining before. Mind you, by the way, there is the Rif actually brings. He says, if you look carefully at the psukim, what you find is, to begin with, when she first invited him in, there was nothing. She's telling him basically, keep your hands off, keep your paws off me. I'm inviting you in order to protect your life, but don't think that you can take any liberties with me. After that, after she gives him the drinks and all that, then she says Sura. So to begin with, she says Sura Eli, which the word Sura means turn aside, like turn aside. Don't you dare touch me. Afterwards, though, when he says, I want some water to drink. And then he grabbed a hold of her and did the Sheva Be'ilus. Therefore, that is why afterwards she killed him. Because he had done that, where she had specifically warned him not to. So according to that, then it's not that she. So according to the way the Rif over here is learning, it's not that she. It's not like she seduced him into it, as Tosfos is saying, but rather that he grabbed the opportunity when he thought he had it, and therefore now she took revenge on him by killing him. But still, the question would be again that if there was any hana, if there was any physical hana involved, you still can't call that what she accomplished over there is greater than the imahos. And therefore, that's the Gemara's answer, is there was no hana involved whatsoever because of the Zuama.
Is this the story when she gave him first cheese and then wine?
That's actually, you're thinking of Yehudis with Holofernes. That was 1,000 years later. Here the pasuk says that he asked for water to drink. Instead, she gave him, instead she gave him milk or cream, which is very heavy stuff, and therefore that caused him to so that made him sleepy. But now the Gemara is adding also the point, the Sheva Be'ilus, the 7 times that he had relations with her, also wore him out to the extent where now he's deeply asleep, and therefore he didn't realize when she's taking the tent peg and killing him. So that's all the words in the pesukim over there. Not Korah, Nafal, Shochav. 7 words in the pasuk over there to referring to crouching down and lying. Poshet Pshat, you would say, in other words, that Devorah is saying he lay down over there and went to sleep, and then he fell, and that's the end of him. But to hear the Gemara is doushening that all those extra words, meaning all those beers.
It's a definition
of Geiris Toshav. Geiris Toshav is the feminine of Geir Toshav. It would mean somebody who was accepted. It would mean somebody who was accepted to Shem Metzis Menenayach.
He said, after all, she's dead today.
Yeah, but that's what we're saying still, that there has to be, that there was no Hana in there, otherwise we can't call it purely Aveir al-Lashma, yeah.
I think you're saying, even though she was disgusted by it, he must have put on a happy face to show it.
Maybe she did, but that's the Gemara is still bothered by. If there was any Hana involved, then nevertheless, if there was any actual Hana involved, then we still couldn't call it greater than the Imos, which is why we're saying that, yeah. All right, the Gemara says, so fine. Later on in the Perek, we know that Chalitza has 3 major components. You have the taking off of the shoe, which we've discussed. Then you have she spits on the ground in front of him, and then you have she says, and she say certain psukim. He says, to begin with, she says, Mayan Yivomi Lahokim Lach of Shem Yisrael. He says, Loy Chafax Lakachta, and so forth. So the Gemara says, Levi Nofak Lakiriyasa. One time Levi maybe we probably have sort to leave this for tomorrow, actually. Okay, I should actually say, rather, tomorrow, actually, I'm not going to be here. So tomorrow I won't be here. So we'll save this next piece for Sunday. Then we won't stop in the middle of it. Fine. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Gimel Kislev. The Zohar tells us that the rainbow is one of the simonim of the Ga'ola. Now, what does that mean? So the Abarbanel explains, B'chol, why is the rainbow a symbol of, after the marble, that Hashem's not going to bring another marble? Because the rainbow represents the purification of the world that came about through the marble. Meaning, in other words, there's the famous question, the rainbow on the face of it is a natural phenomenon. How can we call it a simon that Hashem is not going to bring the marble again? An ois that Hashem is not going to bring a marble again? So in a sicha, the Rebbe explains, before the marble, the clouds were very thick and coarse. So therefore, the sun's rays couldn't refract through them. Therefore, the Derech HaTeva, there was no rainbow because the clouds are too thick and opaque for the light to be able to penetrate through them. After the world has been purified by means of the marble, then the clouds are also more clearer and more translucent than they were before. They're able to actually the sun's rays are able to penetrate through them, and they're able to refract the sun's rays, and therefore you have a rainbow. So therefore, that shows the connection. If the Zohar is saying that there's a connection between the rainbow and Mashiach, the connection is because in Mashiach's times, the whole world will be completely refined and transformed. So therefore, that's the same thing as before the marble versus after the marble bears the same relationship as before Mashiach comes versus after it. Continuing with Halachos of Muktzah. We've been talking about the various major categories of Muktzah. And the dinim of each one of them. So now you have certain kinds of kalim so far what we've said is like this. You have some kinds of kalim which are muktzah, but nevertheless you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. An example of that we said was a hammer that you can move it on Shabbos to crack nuts, or you can move it on Shabbos if you forgot it on a chair or a table and you need the space where it is. Then we said there are categories of muktzah which you cannot move on Shabbos, even l'tzorach gufoy mekoymoy. We said that includes muktzah machnas chesorin kis, something expensive and valuable where you would reserve it only for a certain use and you would never use it for something else. And we gave examples of that. And then you have things that are not a keli at all, like rocks and sticks. Now, then you have a keli which is primarily used for things of heter. Or sometimes it can be used for both Isser and Heter. For example, a pot. A pot is used for Isser because cooking on Shabbos you can't do. But it's also used for Heter because you keep the food in it after it's cooked. And you serve it from the pot. So those would be one kind of thing. You are allowed to move them. L'tzorach atzman, we talked about the other day, the concept called mechama l'tzel, where you have, for example, it's out in the sun and you're concerned it's going to break from the heat or whatever, and so you want to bring it inside to the shade. So we said muktzah things, you're not allowed to do that. But here you have a keli that's used laheter, or laheter and laister, you would be allowed to move it mechama l'tzel. Another example would be you can't move them for no purpose at all, but you can move them for any of those kinds of purposes. Another example would be a dirty keli. You have a concept called muktzah machmas mius, but on Shabbos, such things are mutter to move. So therefore, that would be another example. You can move it not only the tzorach gufoy mekoymoy, but also in order to save the keli itself. Then you have another category, which means any kind of svarim from which you're allowed to learn on Shabbos, as well as food, those you're even allowed to move them, even if there's no purpose in it at all. So we have basically four different categories so far. We have things that you can't move at all, things that you can move, things that you can move for either of those purposes, as well as you can also move it l'tzorach atzmo to save it from getting ruined where it is. And then you have things. Now we're saying that there are things that you can move even for no purpose at all, such as svarim that you're allowed to learn from on Shabbos, svarim and books that you would be allowed to read and learn from on Shabbos, and food. With that said, by the way, there is an interesting point. There is at the end of one of the letters in Tanya in Igeres HaKodesh, there's a part over there where the Alter Rebbe mentions that after all, only from Torah Shabbat Peh do we know what's the definition of Malacha on Shabbos. And he says, "V'loy tiltal avonim v'kodes." It doesn't mean, for example, moving around heavy rocks and beams. And then there's in parenthesis levad only. So there's a note from the Rebbe in Shurim B'Sefer Tanya that points out that whether that word levad belongs there or not is actually subject to a machlokas rishonim. What is the fundamental thing when we say you have to rest on Shabbos? For example, yes, it's true that moving of things around your house is not a malacha in and of itself, but is a lack of resting on Shabbos. The Ramban writes, yes. So here we're talking about, for example, you're allowed to move around svarim on Shabbos, but we don't mean, let's say, for example, to just go and start carrying piles of svarim all over your house. That would be, at least according to the Ramban, a violation of the rest that you're supposed to have on Shabbos. But we're talking about stam. You pick up a book for no particular reason and you're putting it down, then that's not a problem on Shabbos. So that's not any of the categories of muktzah, is what we're saying.